Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Rest is History's bonus episode. And Tom, before we get started, we have some incredibly exciting news, don't we?
I mean, it's off the scale exciting.
So we are doing a live show, a bit like the show we did last autumn in London. And since you are you're the friends of the show, you're our members, you will get first dibs ahead of the general public, plus a 10% discount.
Dominic, that's sensational value, isn't it?
It's absolutely incredible value, Tom. I mean, it's unheard style value, that is, or Beer 52 style value. So the date is Sunday, the 13th of November. And Tom, it's a matinee, isn't it? Which I'm very pleased to see.
Yes, because not everybody lives in London.
Yeah, in fact, most people don't. Let's be frank. Most people don't live in London and
don't
want anything to do with it.
So I'm told.
And we do have plans to visit other parts of the country, perhaps not in 2022, but in 2023.
Like Elizabeth I.
Who knows?
Going on progress around the country.
You know, one week
staying we could in four-poster beds.
One week we could be in Hull, Tom. The next week, Scunthorpe. Who knows?
The next week in the Cotswolds, I would imagine.
Well, one week we could be in Moreton and Marsh. The next week we could be in Stow-on-the-Wold. That's my dream. Anyway, listen. So this is Sunday, the 13th of November. It's a live show. It's in Clapham, I believe, isn't it, Tom? The details.
Then that's an excellent choice.
Yes, it's a poor choice.
15 minutes walk from me.
It's the wrong side of the river for those of us coming in from the rest of the country. Anyway, it's at the Clapham Grand. And the tickets will go on sale from 10 a.m. on Wednesday, the 8th of June. And there will be a link and instructions in the episode notes. And Jack tells us you should have it on email. Now, you may be wondering what we will actually be doing in this live show. And that is an excellent question. And one, Tom, to which we have no answer.
No, we haven't decided yet, I'm afraid.
That's the truth, isn't it? We haven't actually decided what we're going to do. But we'll do something jolly. I'm sure Tom will do some of his voices.
Well, and you as well.
Well, I did a quite nice Gordon Brown, which
you did, and of course your magnificent Midlands Yeoman, medieval Midlands Yeoman, which I thought was your best.
That took a lot.
That was in Robin Hood.
That took a bit of practice, if I'm totally honest. I still quite like the Smuggler.
Yeah,
I like.
Well, I think you do regional,
and you know
regional period accents.
Thank you, and you know Tom, that I think the best thing you've ever done, better. If I was ranking your achievements,
yeah.
I'd put Dominion third, the vampiric novels second, and then your John Lydon laugh at number one.
What did you think of my Ian Richardson?
I thought it was good, but
Francis Zerkut.
I thought it was good, but it wasn't John Lydon standard.
Okay, all right. I think we should crack into some of the comments that we've had.
We should, because we've got to do some recordings after this. Yeah,
yes,
go.
Yes. So we've been. This is a special. You opened by giving a special offer to the members, aka the Wangs.
Yeah.
And we had a comment from Niall K, spotted at the Leeds Art Gallery this morning. It's the man himself, and it's General Gordon standing in Khartoum about to be speared by the soldiers of the Mahdi. And Niall says, I got a few odd looks in the gallery when I fell to my knees and loudly proclaimed, I am a Wang.
Well, if you look at that picture, so what the picture is showing is the famous portrait of Gordon at Khartoum with the sort of the dervishes beneath him, spears poised for the kill.
Bearing his chest, isn't he?
There's this weird conceptual art exhibit, this sort of totem poles type thing, which says this is General Gordon. And this apparently, according to Niall K, features as part of an exhibition, and I quote, exploring issues around misrepresentation and identity through examining mechanisms of stereotyping and unequal power relations connecting the past and the present, all of which he says, I'm guessing, would have Dominic reaching for his keyboard for a new column. And he's not entirely wrong, because actually there was...
Is it woke tosh, Dominic?
It's just gibberish, isn't it, Tom? I mean, did you ever do the Saturday Review for Radio 4?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Well, I used to do that. You know, so for those people who don't know, you would be asked every week. They get a different group of a panel, and you'd have to review a book, a film, a play, a TV program. Some sort of art installation or exhibition. And if you were lucky, it was the British Museum, the Scythians or something, you know, some really good exhibition. If you were unlucky, it was some contemporary art balderdash. Go. You'd, sometimes the other panelists there, there'd be a sort of a literary novelist, there'd be a, you know, a theatre director or whatever. And sometimes I would say, what are you going to say about this on the programme? And they'd always say, I don't know, I'll just read a bit. It's rubbish, isn't it? And I never, there was never anybody who really knew what to say.
Well, I yesterday I mentioned
viewing the story, the captions.
In the episode we did on Prime Ministers being toppled, yeah. I mentioned the story about how I got attacked.
Yes.
Because I read out a speech of Chamberlain, Churchill's speech on Chamberlain after he died. And I did Saturday Review once, and yep. we had to review the Bob Dylan's bootlegs.
All right, yeah.
And it came with a kind of vast book of his lyrics. And I said, I think these are terrible. And I read some of the lyrics out. They're absolute gibberish. And I think it was just after he'd won the Nobel Prize.
Oh, God.
And again, I got physically attacked by...
Did you?
Almost. Well, I didn't quite... I almost got physically attacked.
They were horrified.
By a Dylan enthusiast. So the free expression of critical opinions can be a dangerous thing.
It can be very dangerous. And on those panels, on those shows, I always used to find that the person who went first, if they were negative... They set the tone. It became very, very difficult. Yes.
Yeah.
Because I remember the very first time I was on it, I was on with the critic, Paul Morley, who is a man who wears his learning exceedingly heavily. And we were reviewing the Tom Cruise film Valkyrie about the Stauffenberg plot. So it is relevant for a history podcast. And I thought it was fine. I thought it was absolutely fine. And Paul Morley kicked off with this half-hour rant about how terrible the film was. And then I completely lost my courage. I didn't have the guts
to say, Dominic, I
actually really enjoyed it. So I just sort of...
That's not the spirit of the Midlands.
No. Well, you know, Tom, sometimes we it's good to admit your youthful failings, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, okay. So the installation, is that dissing General Gordon?
It is. It's. I'm sorry to say, I think it's dissing his masculinity.
I think... of all the episodes we've done, the General Gordon episodes were among the most interesting because I'd gone into that in a very kind of Lytton Strachey kind of ha-ha Victorians yeah. kind of way. And I finished that and thought, wow, he was what an extraordinary man. What an admirable
yeah.
man.
Yeah, I did too. I didn't know that much about it. I just knew about Khartoum and I thought this would be a good story, Gordon's fall at Khartoum and Gladstone not rescuing him and stuff. But actually, you know what? He's one of those Victorians who... obviously quite strange to 21st century eyes, but nonetheless admirable. Don't you think, Tom? I mean, he was absolutely an admirable
completely.
Man.
And I think that kind of sneering at him is not on. I feel very defensive of him.
Yeah. But the weird thing is that if General Gordon was alive today, who would he be? I mean, would he be Rory Stewart or would he be kind of George Monbiot or somebody?
Peter Tatchell.
Peter Tatchell. He'd be somebody incredibly earnest. And sort of
brave,
yeah, physically brave, devoted to a cause, much mocked probably
yeah.
on Twitter,
but heroic,
but heroic nonetheless. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, right. So that's General Gordon. We stood up for him. What else do we have? Comments coming in still on the Jubilee. I suppose we ought to talk about the Jubilee. I mean, I feel like we've been doing nothing but talk about the Jubilee for
weeks. About the Jubilee, yeah. isn't it? But I was pleased to see Paddington.
Yes. So Jubilee. A lot of comment on that.
Yeah.
So Nick and, Rogers, good Lord, Dominic having tea with the Queen. So for those who didn't see it, this was the opening to the concert, I think, on Saturday evening that was staged outside Buckingham Palace. And it began with footage of Paddington Bear having tea with the Queen. And it was very sweet, wasn't it?
It was lovely, actually. So it was the sequel to, in a way, to her appearance of James Bond at the 2012 Olympics. But she actually participated more in this one.
I thought she acted really well.
Yeah, she did.
It can't be easy.
Just playing opposite CGI.
Opposite a computer-generated yeah. bear.
Exactly. She was very good.
And she looked happy, I thought.
She did. Nice. I've actually never seen the Queen smile as much.
Yeah,
she was
having a great time.
We were having a chat about whether this would become a regular thing and what Charles would do at his coronation. So I suggested that his coronation, now, Tom, you may think this awfully sentimental, but I think the way that they should do, so at Charles's coronation, I think there should be a video insert during that where Charles meets Doctor Who, and they either go back in time or the Doctor brings people out to the TARDIS and they're old kings and queens.
Well,
you to wish him luck.
So,
wouldn't that
so there
be
was,
nice?
So there was a parade, wasn't there, on the Sunday, which I missed.
Oh, there was. I didn't watch that.
But they brought out there's this kind of huge gold coach 18th century gold coach that I think Elizabeth rode to her coronation in. And they showed, they played a hologram of her waving from the window. And I thought that they could have holograms of kings and queens.
That'd be great.
So they could have Athelstan turn up at the coronation.
But what they could do, Tom, is they could get, so people who have played, king, so they could get Colin Firth as George the Sixth. But the best thing about that is if they
But they could actually get George the Sixth.
Well, they could, but if they got actors to play them, you know, I mean, there's only one person I can think of who's played William the Conqueror.
Yes.
Who could, who could come and wish Charles well, and that's you.
Yeah, I'd very happily do that. I'm, you know, for my country, I'm willing to step up to the plate and play William the Conqueror at the coronation.
I think you should. Yeah. I think you should.
Okay, yeah, I'm putting that on the record now. And you, of course, could play Paddington.
I could play Paddington.
What a double bill that would be.
William the Conqueror and Paddington. But unfortunately, William the Conqueror has a slightly checkered record at coronations, doesn't he? Westminster Abbey coronations.
Well, a bit of slaughtering of the cheering crowds outside.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
whatever, accidents happen. Anyway, do we have stuff on... we do, on episodes.
On recent episodes.
So we've got lots of comments on Australian prime ministers.
So we shamed ourselves in these episodes, Tom. I think largely you, but me as well, a little bit, by saying good day at the end of the episodes.
You did as well.
I did as well, but I was led by you. You've been to Australia. I've never been to Australia. I've never been east of Turkey. So it's entirely your fault. We should have said hooroo, says Don Groves.
Yeah.
I don't know what... Do Australians say hooroo?
I don't think I've ever heard an Australian say hooroo, but Don Groves is clearly Australian, so
yeah,
he knows better than me. So it's a corruption of hooray, apparently.
Now, Tim Beer says he's informing us that Harold Holt, who's now, I think, very much a friend of the rest of his history.
Definitely.
He said, it's a common turn of phrase in Australia to hear of someone doing a Harold Holt. For example, you're at a pub with a group of mates and one goes missing or goes home. Where's Phil? He's done a Harold Holt. Gone for a swim and got drowned and had a swimming pool named after him.
Joe Cummings, who I'm guessing is Canadian.
Yeah.
So in the wake of your wonderful shows, thank you. Thank you, Joe, on Australia's prime ministers, I believe a similar Canadian breakdown could be just as entertaining. From our first PM, he is Canadian, the drunkard Sir John A. Macdonald to clairvoyant loving Mackenzie King, Nobel Prize winning Lester B. Pearson, and the dashing Pierre Trudeau, there is plenty to work with.
Well, Pierre Trudeau, definitely, because didn't Margaret Trudeau, his wife,
with Castro?
But I was about to say with the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, she definitely did that. But the rumour is that Justin Trudeau is Castro's...
Fidel Castro's son.
Yeah. If you look at them, they're very similar.
Are they?
Yeah.
Has... What? I mean, what would Fidel Castro think about Justin Trudeau's party attire?
Well, Cuba is a party. It's a party country, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, Castro
I'm sure he would
almost
agree.
Certainly consider himself anti-racist. So I don't think the Trudeau...
But so does Justin Trudeau.
Yeah, he does. But, anyway, let's not get into Justin Trudeau. I sort of have mixed feelings about Justin Trudeau because part of me thinks I just find him incredibly, incredibly irritating. And then another part of me thinks, come on, you should be bigger than that.
Did you not like him when he went to India and dressed up?
But doesn't everybody dress up now? Cameron dressed up, didn't he? Cameron put on a turban and stuff. So did Boris, I think.
Yeah, I think so. But I think Justin Trudeau went the whole hog. He did. Full Bollywood, didn't he?
Yeah, he went full. Yeah. Heads of government should adopt the national dress of the country they're visiting.
Because I kind of thought, you know, I could see myself doing that in a foolish attempt to blend in.
Yeah, in your Blairite way.
Yes, exactly. Which,
All right, I've never been to India,
but generally on the topic of, I think the precedent set of using elections to have a kind of a spin through the presidents or prime ministers of a given country is quite a good one, isn't it?
It is, Tom. But I mean, can we do it forever? You know, well, Luxembourg are having a general election. Let's crack into the prime ministers of Luxembourg.
Italy would be fun.
Italy. I mean, how long have we got?
Well, we just have to get the best ones.
Prime Ministers of Italy.
Giulio Andreotti, Berlusconi.
Yeah, Andreotti, Berlusconi, of course.
Great stuff there.
There's quite a lot of technocrats, though. I probably don't want to
ignore them. We'd focus on the fun ones.
Yeah. Maybe you're right. I mean, obviously, US presidents looms large, doesn't it? Because we've always talked about doing a huge series of US presidents. We've never got around to it.
Or a World Cup.
Yeah, or the World Cup, which a lot of people have asked for. World Cup of American presidents. My dark horse, Gerald Ford. I can see Very dark.
Dominic, I have unfortunate news.
We're running out of time.
No, the next topic is Jubilees. So we're back to the Jubilee.
Oh my God, I thought we'd done Jubilees.
No, I'm afraid not. So let's just whistle through these. Okay. Because honestly, guys, we've got to move on from Jubilees and stuff. James Henderson, this is on Indian languages. So we were talking about
Queen Victoria
and the Munchie. Talk
Hindustani.
Indian language. At the time, Hindustani was used to cover both of the languages. We now refer to separately as Urdu and Hindu. So that's very good.
Okay, I know nothing of Indian languages, I'm afraid, James.
Tom Payne 76 implausibly says, great start to the week, listening to this.
Hmm.
Not very Tom Payne-ish.
No.
I was interested to hear the first Jubilee was only in 1809. Why was this? There are a fair few English monarchs who made it to 25 years, including a very popular Elizabeth I, and some who made it past 50. Were there no celebrations, or were they just not called Jubilees? I had no idea. I don't think
there were celebrations. I mean, I think they were probably national celebrations on the monarch's birthday. And of course, until the Reformation, you know, the court was kind of locked into a cycle of feast days and festivities anyway, wasn't it, Tom? So a Jubilee wouldn't necessarily have stood out, I suppose.
Yeah,
I don't know. There just wasn't a Jubilee before 1809. Now, I don't have any explanation for why it didn't occur to people before then. But what about Roman emperors? Did they have... They probably didn't rule for long enough, did they?
Because... Yeah, no, not really.
And certainly the early emperors, they wouldn't have had a...
Because he wouldn't admit that you were a monarch.
Because you wouldn't admit that you're not... Right, you're not a monarch. Yeah.
But pharaohs, we covered the pharaohs.
We did indeed. What about Jim Condy's question? Do you think the Queen's devout Anglican beliefs means that she's a secret subscriber to the divine right of kings?
No.
I would say definitely not. Yeah, no, definitely
don't
not.
I think she is. Comment on... last week's members episode, Cloudy Sky, on the topics of Dominic, the New York Times, and being mentioned in other books. I found this review of Andrew Marr's Head of State. Never read it, never heard of it before, he puts in brackets. And I'm not surprised he puts it in brackets, because what he then goes on to say, this quotation from Andrew Marr's book, a dead letter drop at a library involves leaving notes in books by Dominic Sandbrook on the basis that no one ever reads them.
Yeah, it's have we not harsh. Talked about this before?
Sandbrook, it seems, once gave a book by Marr a bad review.
Yeah, so there's a whole backstory to this, which I learned about from TV people that I had in common with Andrew Marr, who'd worked on his TV series and then later worked on mine, who said that he published a book, A History of Modern Britain, which I reviewed in The Telegraph. And in that weird way that happens... I've never really had to come back for the terrible, terrible reviews I've written. But sometimes when you give people a lukewarm review, they clearly expect better. And Andrew Marr was such a person. He was apparently very put out by this lukewarm sort of 3 stars review and was determined to get his own back, which he decided to do in this novel. So in the novel, people are leaving. I haven't read it either. To be honest, Tom, I don't know anyone who has read it. Supposedly, people leave secret notes for each other and they hide them in copies of my books in the library because he says we need to choose books that nobody will ever read. And Andrew Marr thought this was an absolutely tremendous comeback.
A zinger.
The problem, well, not the problem, but his book wasn't sufficiently popular for this to become well known. So generally, whenever the subject comes up, it's me who brings it up because I've heard of it, but nobody else has. So that's the story.
The story. Right.
And what's worse, you know what's the worst thing, is that when it came out, he gave interviews about the fact that he'd written a thriller. And in every interview, every article he wrote, he went out of his way to say, I wonder what Dominic Sandbrook will make of this, because, you know, he's got a shock coming. And people sort of said...
I hope you've never publicly replied.
No. In fact, the Daily Mail invited me to write an article replying to Andrew Marr, and I said, I'm not going to rise to that. So I've just never, ever replied. And now his books, I think, those novels are out of print. So
they remained.
The moment has passed. Mm. Oh, anyway.
And then childbirth.
Yeah, that was a good episode. Completely my idea, as I said on Twitter.
It's been very, very popular with the midwives of South London, I'm happy to report.
That's good.
So that's been very good for me.
So DVD had a comment. On listening to this podcast, it would be easy to take away the impression that modern medicine has made no contribution to childbirth and has indeed been harmful. However, in high-income countries with technologically advanced obstetric services, maternal deaths in child birth are very rare, 9.2 deaths per 100,000 deliveries in the UK. And I suppose there's always that tension, isn't it, when you're doing the history of childbirth, of midwifery, of sort of maternity services and so on. There's the tendency, there's the tension between, I mean, I'm sure this is the wrong way of putting it, but the kind of natural and the medical. I mean, that's always there, isn't it, Tom?
Yeah, it is absolutely there, and it continues to be there. So the emphasis on home births as opposed to hospital births, natural delivery as opposed to epidurals. These are very much ongoing themes.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, fashion kind of swings, both for midwives and for medicine more generally, kind of hospital practice.
Yeah. Well, it also very much depends on the individual's experience, doesn't it? Because people tend to take their own experiences as kind of symptomatic of a general trend, and they sort of say, "Well, I had a home birth and it was brilliant. Everybody should have one."
Yeah, I think generally home births are brilliant, and I think you're likelier to have a, as far as I can tell, and I'm simply reporting, you're likelier to have a kind of happier experience if you deliver at home. But the only thing is that if something goes seriously wrong, you probably want to be in hospital.
Yeah.
Well, but the odds on it going seriously wrong are so small that probably you're better off having a home birth.
We had our son at a maternity unit, which was kind of midwives only. And it went really well. And we were in and out within, he was born at 6 o'clock, just before 6 o'clock. And we were home before midnight for tea and toast with him.
Lovely.
So that was very good. But then other people at the same, friends of ours at the same unit, it went disastrously wrong. And they were being sort of ferried across the country in ambulances and all these kinds of things. So it's completely random, isn't it? I mean, this is, I know we're not a childbirth.
No.
The rest is childbirth.
No, but I'm really
probably
glad
not the
did.
Ideal people to be pronouncing on this
I'm
subject.
Really glad we did it. I thought Sarah was a great guest. And I just think it's an incredibly interesting topic.
It is.
Because I think it's one of those, a bit like sex or food, I suppose, that it's such a constant, it's such a universal.
Yeah.
And yet it's been experienced in so many different ways, and it's kind of generated so many different cultural framings that it's a really interesting way of looking at how, change and continuity, which is the kind of the classic historical question.
It is. Tom, we've done food. I think, I don't know, I think that we'd have to do quite a lot of podcasts. The barrel would have to run quite dry before the two of us started hosting sex podcasts, don't you think?
Well, I would very happily do one on Roman sexuality. Which is
okay. That's sufficiently
fascinating.
Distant.
It's a fascinating topic. It's so rude by our standards that it would have to have all kinds of warnings on it. But it's a really, really interesting topic.
Well, the classic thing is that everybody knows about the Romans and sexuality is the graffiti at Pompeii, isn't it? Mm. That's most people's sort of introduction to the topic, and that's pretty much standard, isn't it? That I mean, the Romans had no problem with kind of the overt display of sexualized messages and sexual graffiti and sexual imagery. Am I right?
It was a very phallic society.
Yeah. As Greece was, right?
Yeah. So interestingly, most of our slang, I think something like 80% of it tends to be female genitals.
Mm-hmm.
In Latin, it's about 80% male genitals.
Now, why is that?
We will do an episode and I will explain.
You don't want to give me a clue?
It's reflective of the central status that the free male citizen has in Roman culture, and his appendage is an expression of that. The Roman penis is very much associated with things that stab, thrust, and kill.
Yeah. How is that different from the Greeks, though, with their... Because they had their... What were they called?
We will discuss all this.
Okay. We don't
so
want to
much
do
a, to... But yeah. We would need to clear it, I guess, with the production team. whether it would incinerate all our sponsors
they're very puritanical, our producers.
Well, they're concerned not to damage the brand.
Yeah.
And then we another comment from Anna M. My impression is that childbirth is subconsciously seen by society as a rare opportunity for women to display physical heroism. We are effectively given the message that confronting pain without the modern miracle of an epidural proves our strength and virtue and is somehow a gateway to true motherhood. Is it just the first of many self-sacrifices demanded of good mothers?
That's a good
so
point.
That idea of childbirth as an expression of heroism is definitely there in antiquity. So for the Spartans, a woman who gives birth to a large number of children is hailed as a hero.
Yeah,
and is equal with you know, a man who has displayed his heroism on the battlefield.
But that's quite 20th century as well. I mean, you think of sort of the lording of the mother and the in the sort of post-war year. I mean, even the, in America in the post-war years, the sort of the idealized housewife who has, you know, 2.4 children and brings them up perfectly and this sort of the evocation of motherhood in Nazi Germany or indeed in communist Russia.
It's less dangerous now, though, isn't it? I think in antiquity, or certainly, you know, really before the 20th century, probably, I mean, it was so dangerous relative to what it is now.
Yeah.
That there was a sense of, you know, that amazing poem that Sarah read.
Yeah.
Of the woman about to go into childbirth, begging her husband if he marries again. Not to let the stepdame.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Kind of, well, that's sort of
feed the children to bears.
You would have to say your goodbyes before, you know, before giving birth. I mean, that's terrifying, really, isn't it? Okay.
So, Tom,
we have to record a mini series about Cleopatra now, don't we?
We do.
Which is exciting.
And also forthcoming, we've got pigeons. So that's coming.
Yeah. Yeah, we do.
So excited. There's huge excitement about pigeons. We may, almost certainly will, have an episode themed around Love Island.
Tom is very, very keen on this. Tom was ringing me just before midnight last night to discuss his plans for the Love Island episode.
It's going to be great. So lots. And what else have we got? We've got the American Civil War coming.
Yeah, we're recording
that. We've got Stonehenge coming for the solstice.
Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, Gone with the Wind. Lots to come.
And we've got some things that people are cross about because they've sent in questions and we haven't got around to doing that episode. So the two examples of that are Dunkirk.
Yeah. And JFK.
And JFK.
And they will be coming.
They will come. Yeah. They will come. Dunkirk, perhaps not for a little while, but JFK definitely within the next few months, I would say.
Maybe the summer.
Possibly August, September. Yeah. I mean, conceivably, Tom, I mean, when's the anniversary? So it was the 22nd of November when he was shot. And by then, of course, we'll be into the World Cup. Yeah. So we can't do
have
it
we
then.
Have we talked about that?
No, that's a secret. The World Cup is a secret.
There is a World Cup theme. But if you don't like football, don't worry. It has nothing to do with football.
It has nothing to do with football. So you don't need to worry. But we're using the World Cup as we have a plan. Yes. This is all so exciting, I can't tell you. But it may involve Tom talking about the history of Senegal.
I welcome a challenge.
That mini series on the history of Qatar isn't going to tell itself.
So much to come. All right. Well, we must go and do Cleopatra. Is there anything else we need to say, Dominic?
Nothing. We have to do some ad reads, but we'll do that separately. So
Euro Millions.
Yeah, we won't subject you to that. Okay. Bye, everybody. See you next week or whenever.
Bye-bye. Bye.